Welcome to Shine and the Shine Conference, and I've named you all Shinees because that's what we are. We're here to shine, and when we leave, we're here to shine, and that's what the whole NEP-INE program is about. And I'm supposed to talk about when I got into health and when I met Dr. Rita Marie, and I realized in looking at that, wins are really as important as your whys, because if you look back at all your wins, those are choices that help you get to your why. So I had asthma as a child, and I was an athlete, and that really stank because it prevented me from playing out a whole game of tennis or swimming. And so when I was 20, I got into a food co-op. That was my first experience into being part of the health movement. But back then, that was the late 70s, so nobody was really doing it. So there was little support there, but it was nice to learn then to start reading labels and start making food choices. And then it ended up being a lot of different kinds of diets that I went through. And then I had my first child, and then again I had to do something alone with a little bit of help from La Leche League. But no one was breastfeeding in the 80s like they are now, because the information wasn't as universal as it is now. But that one thing, though, helped me. Those two things helped me learn to ask questions and to be a smart consumer. And that's really, as Shinees of this conference, is what we're all becoming. Whether you ever do this as a business or you do it just for your own health and your family, you are influencing people. And that's what's significant about being part of this program. And I actually missed my opportunity about 15 years ago because the internet really has opened up our world. There was no way to get this kind of information. And so I think I met Dr. Rita Marie in about 2006 or 7 because I started following different people like the Giannis. They used to have a video class, but it wasn't school. And so what's so wonderful, and we are so lucky to have a mentor in this industry that wants to help us all go out and shine. And Dr. Tom O'Brien yesterday said, we are the bootsteps, and we really are. We're the ones that go out and shine, and we're getting the information that helps us do that. So with that, I'm glad to welcome Dr. Rita Marie to come out here and tell us more.
You get that. Oh boy. So how's everybody doing? That was a long. Was it worth going deep? Okay. So what I'm going to do this, because I have a lot I want to share with you, and we can't go as deep as on COMT. If we do that on every snip, we will be here till the end of December. And I don't know about you, but I'd like to get home and see my kids and the dog and make Thanksgiving work and Christmas. So, and the hotel will throw us out at 6 o'clock tomorrow. So, I want to go in. I know that the MAO was not listed. We'll go into a little bit more of that. Even though it's not listed, because we're going to figure out a way to get you that number, and it's really important. And you will be seeing people who have had their tests done before 2 months ago when they eliminated it. That's really sad. So what I want to do here is I want to go through some of the SNPs, and I want to hold the questions to the end, and we will leave 15 minutes before the next break, for you to ask questions. But also, I want you to write your questions down, and if we can't answer them now, we have an optional session tomorrow night where you're welcome to submit a case if you want my words on it, my look at it. I'll pick one case to go through in a little bit more depth, and then we'll have Q&A time. We'll have plenty of time. So remember I told you before, write your questions down. Any questions that are coming up, just write them down and turn them in the back, and right on the top, put your name on it. Unless you want to remain anonymous, that's fine too. But if you want to, put your name on it and then just say questions. And then hand them in and we'll get them, we'll compile them, and we'll make sure that we're here for you to answer those questions. Okay? Good deal? Okay? If, as I'm going through this, there's a complete showstopper and everybody's looking at me like, what are you talking about? I will stop and ask a few clarifying questions. But I really want to get through the rest of the brain stuff, and I want to get through the cardiovascular at least. Okay, over here. So we have our mental health. There's 3 pages of these. Here's the thing. Other than the MAO and the GAD, Most of them are related. Well, MAO is related to dopamine too, but they're related to dopamine. So I'm going to go through those first because it's quick, and then we'll go back and do GAD, and then we'll talk about MAO, okay? So here's the thing. On the second page, there's sleep. SLC, those are responsive, both SLCs, responsible for clearing dopamine, different parts of the brain. The ANKK1 is related to dopamine receptors. So you can have an effect on either increased or decreased dopamine effectively, functionally, based on the receptor being damaged or the amount not being right. And I want to just say a little bit about the receptors because this plays into hormones as well. We don't have time to talk about hormone receptors, but we know about insulin resistance, right? The receptors get damaged. They can no longer do what they're supposed to do and handle the substance that they are designed for. And when that happens, we get an increase or a decrease usually in the function of that particular hormone. And I just want to point it out for thyroid because here's the most missed tip you're going to get. Most people that go to the doctor with clear symptoms of hypothyroidism, down to the lateral third of the eyebrows are gone, they're exhausted, etc., and the doctor says, your TSH is fine, and you don't have a thyroid problem. The other thing they do is they'll look at them, and they will even do a more thorough test, and everything's fine. Say you don't have a thyroid problem. You guys will know better. Receptor resistance. So whenever you're working with somebody who's either on thyroid medication or whatever, receptor resistance. And I know that's off topic, but it came to my mind, and I wanted you to know that because it's a gem that you're not going to hear anywhere. They can have all the right thyroid functional tests done and the receptor resistance. Similar here with the dopamine. If we're looking and going, levels look good, everything looks good, you don't have a dopamine problem. Receptors, right? So it can be receptors that get damaged and oxidative byproducts damage receptors, right? Fats, heated processed fats, trans fats will damage receptors. But if they have this particular SNP and the thyroid receptors are broken, they're basically going to have a functional dopamine. Dopamine receptors are broken. They're going to have a functional dopamine deficiency. So all of the ones here, the SLCs, the ANAK, the DBH, that's dopamine beta hydroxylase, which codes for dopamine synthesis. If we have SNPs in any of these areas, we want to carefully check them for signs of dopamine imbalance. And if so, then we want to help them to restore those pathways. And we don't have time in this 3 days together to go into, you know, the details of all that because we have 3-4 hours of talks on neurotransmitters on our site, right? We don't have time to do all that here. We can't compress a 2-year program into 3 days. So I wish I could do it via USB drive, stick it in my ear, pop it out, stick it in your ear, boom, in your brain, done, right? Would that make life easy? Anything you want to learn, they're going to sell these little devices that stick in your ear and they stimulate your brain and everything's transferred. Future. Yeah, I'm not an engineer. Can't do that. I'll be happy to donate for a fee. It's taken me a lot to get all the information that's in my brain. So the DRDs are related there. They make the dopamine receptors. The ANNK has an effect on dopamine. It's really unclear in the literature what that effect is, but it affects dopamine receptors. The two SLCs have an effect on clearance of dopamine, and the DBH has an effect on the creation of dopamine. So all these things come into, if they have any of these SNPs, we want to look at them for dopamine. How do you know if somebody has a dopamine problem? Depression is very common, but here's the critical one that you want to know about, loss of motivation. Loss of motivation. I used to want to do this all the time. It's so fun anymore. I don't want to do that anymore. Loss of motivation, okay? So depression, how do you distinguish depression from serotonin? That's the big one that I use. The other issue with dopamine is severe dopamine. I mean, like really low dopamine leads to what condition that we all would like to avoid? Parkinson's. Parkinson's is a dopamine deficiency. I will tell you this. I have, my kids are kind of weird compared to most people's kids, and they get into medical stuff a lot. My kid was like 12, going through puberty, and you know that's a difficult age. Comes in and he sits down, "Mom, I think I have Parkinson's." And I'm like, "Okay, well, I'm heading towards Parkinson's." I said, "Okay, I've been researching, and I think I have low dopamine." "Like, why do you think that?" He named some things. And I said, "Okay, and why do you associate with this?" "Well, Parkinson's, when you have a severe dopamine deficiency." My 12-year-old, right, thinks he has. He, another time he came to me and told me he thought he had diabetes. So anyway, there are dangers to having a mom with this background. Anyway, severe dopamine deficiency can create Parkinson's, right? So don't you want to know if somebody is leaning in that direction and help them? There's a lot of things you can do to help them, okay? So I just want you to know that. We're going to go to GAD. GAD is related to GABA. GABA is a calming neurotransmitter. Glutamate is an excitatory neurotransmitter. Monosodium glutamate is one of the variations on glutamate. There's an enzyme called glutamic acid decarboxylase. That breaks down the glutamic acid and turns it into GABA. So if you have someone who's like can't slow down, is all excited, can't sleep at night, right? Anxiety, can't turn it off, it could be here. So this SNP, there's a lot of variations on it. I think I have half of them as homozygous and some others as heterozygous. So you guys can look at my thing and figure that out. All right, so just pick the ones you have. We're going to leave trashing 23andMe behind right now, and we're going to work with what we got, okay? Yeah, because I'm frustrated with it, but you've got some of them, okay? So you've got enough of them to know if you have a tendency towards not making enough GABA, having too much glutamate, or not. But it's modifiable by lifestyle. Here's the thing. Heart math, meditation, tapping, mindfulness breaks, all of these things are vital, 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 vital for someone with a GAD. I will tell you that that keeps me from being on the ceiling because I take those breaks. Calming herbs can be helpful. Foods, you know, I told one person, I want you to, right in the middle of the afternoon, I want you to take your cup of chamomile tea and just go sit on your rocking chair for as long as it takes you to drink your tea. And it was a huge, huge impact on her levels of stress, right? We jokingly call it, GAD stands for glutamic acid decarboxylase, but it also stands for generalized anxiety disorder. So if you're ever wondering what does the GAD do, it's generalized anxiety disorder. That's what you need to know. And what you need to know clinically with these folks is give them the mindfulness breaks, give them the soothing, calming things. Caffeine is not a good thing for people with the GADs, right? So if you're a coffee addict and you have some GADs, it might be time to switch to green tea and then switch to herbal tea and chamomile and lavender and get some essential oils and rub them on your neck before you go to sleep and put it on their pillow. So little rituals that are going to give them more calm. Did my mic just do something? Okay. All right. This is what's important, okay? You're going to see the word decarboxylase, carboxylase. If you haven't studied the biochemistry, it's just a way to, you know, move molecules around, let's just say. So anxiety, depression, panic disorders, right? There's some people who just go into panic disorders, agoraphobia, social phobia, very common, but social phobia can also be pyloria, which is zinc deficiency and B6 deficiency, but like people who just don't go out. They just can't go out. They just can't go in public. They wouldn't be sitting in this room. Social anxiety, you know, and I don't see any of you in here. I don't see any of you going around like, "I'm here, but I'm really not doing well here." Schizophrenia and an extreme bipolar and an extreme heroin dependency as well. Okay? So those SNPs not there, the 197, whatever. So this is what you're looking for here. These are the people that you're going to have to help them calm down. These are the people that if you teach them heart math, they go, And then I'm going to tell you another thing. They don't do the exhale, right? And the trick is, the exhale is where we go into parasympathetic. Know the difference between sympathetic, parasympathetic nervous system? Anybody not? I'll explain it if no. Okay, sympathetic nervous system, fight, flight. Got to get away from the tiger. Parasympathetic, rest and digest, reproduce, heal. All of those things are important. And when people are in the fight, flight mode all the time, which they will tend to be with these SNPs, with this and the COMT and the MAO, you got to have them do the breathing. And when you watch them, whether you do face-to-face or you do it on Zoom, you can see them. You keep your eyes open while you're, and you go, okay, nope, finish the exhale. I do heart math all the time. I had one woman say, anxious up the wazoo, and say, okay, so you do it all the time. Let's do it together. And she'd do it, and she'd go. And then, I'd be like, no, 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 you got to do it right, right? So you have to do it right. The exhale is super important, which is why I say extend the exhale. The exhale puts you into parasympathetic. Because, right, sympathetic, oh, you got to bring that in. Parasympathetic, let it go. Extend the exhale as long as possible. That's what's critical for these people, okay? And then, last but not least, let me mention the sleep one. I know Donna mentioned the sleep one yesterday, the AANAT, trouble making melatonin, converting serotonin from melatonin, right? And that's not on there? It's not genotyped? It's page two of the report, yeah. Second one, AANAT. Okay. So codes for the conversion. Now, a lot of times, this is just the way I practice. I don't like to give people the downstream metabolites or hormones if I don't have to. I like to give the body the precursors, the building blocks, and let it make as much. I do that with hormones. I do it with neurotransmitter precursors. So if I want to do something to stimulate melatonin, I'll start with stimulating serotonin. And 5-HTP is a good supplement for that. If they're low in tryptophan, and you got to give it with B6 because B6 converts it. And I will say something about the Stratagene report from Ben Lynch. It shows you a lot of the conversion factors. So there's pictures in there related to your specific SNPs, and it will tell you this is a magnesium dependent. So if we're trying to get a person to make more of this because they have a SNP in this area, let's give them some magnesium-rich foods. So we want to do this in a way that supports the body. But if they have the AANAT, they don't convert the serotonin to melatonin. That's in a case where you give them melatonin. Okay? And Donna said that she doesn't see any negative side effects. I haven't seen much, but what I have seen is that a lot of people will get really bad nightmares with too much melatonin. Has anybody seen that? What's that? Say it again. Okay, we'll talk about it after. Yeah. excuse me. All right. Here's the thing, though. Taking melatonin with an MAO SNP can be problematic, and it can cause some agitation. It can cause some negative side effects. So just be careful. It's not, some people like, melatonin's safe. Give them 15 milligrams. No. Here's another thing. I'm going to another tip. This is from my clinical practice for 30 years almost. Minimum effective dose. Write that down. Minimum effective dose. Just because some studies were done where they gave somebody 15 milligrams of something, you want to give them the minimum effective dose. Because the more stuff you put in, the more we don't know about how things are interacting. Minimum effective dose. Now, it's possible if you're really somebody's in a really anxious state or they're not sleeping and they haven't slept for a while, you just want to get them out. And if you can do it without Ambien or some of those sleep medications, you just give them a higher dose. But if there's somebody who's very sensitive and they tell you, I'm very sensitive, if I take supplements, if I take this, I get reactions. I react to foods, I react to other things. Be super careful supplementing them with anything. I've had people go wacky with B vitamins. I had one person who we had to take one B vitamin. She really needed these B vitamins. We took one capsule, and we opened it up and put it in a tincture bottle. Shook it up, filled it with water, and shook it up. And she was going to work up to how taking the one, because she took one capsule, and she took a pinch, and it was, she even on a pinch, one capsule in a bottle, and she just worked up a drop at a time. And she felt really good as long as she didn't exceed a certain number. She's a cheap date. What? Oh, she got anxious. She got like, ugh. She went over the top, right? Things can have effects on people, and we don't know enough about all the genetic factors. We don't know enough about all the adverse effects. We don't know enough about their complete biochemistry, their digestion, their microbiome, to be able to predict with certainty how every supplement's going to go. That's why food first, lifestyle first. Yes, we need to supplement. Yes, our food supply is depleted. But we go minimum effective dose. Can everybody write that down? Does everybody make sense with that? Minimum effective dose. Supplement companies don't want to hear me say that. But she was a cheap date. A bottle of V vitamins lasted her 3 or 4 years. Pretty cool. And she felt good. I had the same thing with DHEA. I've had people take one drop of DHEA, which was like 1.2 milligrams, and get amazing results. And then I hear people taking 100 milligrams of it. Like, we don't want to muck with the body's hormone system. And there's another thing, and we go through all of this in our, you guys are in the program, right? We go over this over and over again, is the, what's the call? Not the inhibition, it's the, I'm drawing a blank on the actual name. So here's the deal. If you give your body a hormone that it's supposed to make, it goes, oh, thank you. Goes to sleep. Shut down. See it all the time with thyroid. These poor people that are put on thyroid and on high doses of thyroid hormone, and then they're suppressed, right? And their TSH is like 0.01. And then now they're going to try to get off of it. It's really hard because the body doesn't know how to make thyroid anymore because it's been shut down. Minimum effective dose when it comes to hormones, when it comes to neurotransmitter precursors, etc. Okay? Any questions on, well, I'm going to hold questions to the end. I keep asking any questions, and then we get sidetracked. We'll go to the end, and we'll ask questions. And I'm watching. I need my timer. Can you get me my timer up here so I can keep track, and I can, okay. So MAO. There's a version, an MAOA, and there's MAOB. There's a slight variation between them. I'll talk about MAOB first because it's easier. So MAOB codes an enzyme that metabolizes dopamine and histamine, okay? When they have this MAOB, they are at a higher risk of Parkinson's, depression, and loss of motivation because it affects the dopamine. When we look at MAOA, it is dopamine, serotonin, and epinephrine. So there's a slightly different manifestation there. So there's two variations. The MAOA is a slow metabolizer. The MAOG is a fast metabolizer. And this is all on here, okay? And so you're going to get those kind of like the warrior versus the worrier, right? The only symptom of fast is depression because it's low dopamine. The symptoms of it being slow means it's not clearing epinephrine, right? Epinephrine is adrenaline. It's not clearing it fast enough. There's aggression, there's anxiety and all that. Slightly different than the warrior in the COMT. But when you have both of them together, they can accentuate each other. So somebody who's like super hyper aggressive, with the MAO, the warrior is more an aggressive person, like aggressive and really out there, whereas the warrior in COMT is more of a strong, get things done, stay calm, emergency room nurse, right? ER docs, strong, stay that way, do triage, good at that, right? Whereas when you have the MAOB, and especially if you have both of them, and the MAOA, that's more of that, you know, they have no ability to be empathetic. They can't be loving. They just don't have that in the true full sense of the word. They're just out there. This could be like the paid soldiers, right? They get out there and they're just doing their job. There's no empathy for anybody. I can name a few other people that are probably there too. But we won't go there. Sorry. It's about a halfway through day two. I start like losing my voice from talking too much. All right, that's it for our mental health genes. I want to move to the cardiovascular. I want to finish the cardiovascular. And I'm hoping that most of these are coded still. So I need you guys to hand out the cardiovascular. And I'll tell you what we have. We have three pages. There's triglycerides and cholesterol, blood pressure, and blood clotting. You know how there's some people who just have a tendency to have high blood pressure and they can't eat salt, they can't do this, they just have to look at something stressful, watch a stressful movie, the blood pressure goes up, and they're put on medications. It's dangerous to have high blood pressure, right? You can have a risk of stroke. That's not good, right? You have a risk of cardiovascular incidents where there's an MI or other kinds of, you know, vascular thrombosis and things like that. So we need to keep the blood pressure steady. And there's three listed. A, we forgot to take off the gene. That's what our template looks like at the bottom. Gene, variation, ignore that when you get it. I'll wait till you get it. And then we have blood clotting, right? If somebody has that increased blood clotting, they're going to be more prone to stroke, to heart attack, to thrombosis, to Berger's disease, which is a vascular problem in the legs. So you have it almost. And then we have the triglycerides and the cholesterol. So all of these are important in cardiovascular health. And with any issues in any of the SNPs in here, I highly recommend the test that Dr. Allen was talking about yesterday with the advanced lipid profile and APO. So if you have any, you know, if you have one yellow and three pages worth of stuff, it's probably not a big deal, but look at the family history because it's hidden. And that was the thing that he pointed out, right? His wife, she's perfect picture of health. I don't know if anybody saw her when she was here, but perfect picture of health. She's athletic, she's built, she works out, she's gorgeous. She's APO, little I. And she eats impeccably. She's got to be careful, even more careful than she is to make sure, okay? And I'll go through some slides on this too. So what I'm going to ask you to do on these, I'm just going to point out, with the clotting, you'll look at your sheet and see these are would all be in the detox one, starting on page, where'd my detox one go? Here, page 9, okay. Any, are these other non-genotyped in here? There's three pages. They're working on it. You're handing out three pages, right? Yeah. One has two sides. Are there any of these staple? No, two of them have two sides. Blood clotting is just one side. Blood pressure is two sides because one side is blood pressure, the other side is nitric oxide, which is very much related to it, and I'll talk to you about that. And then the third one is triglyceride and cholesterol. And while you are looking at that, I'm going to take some water. Okay, so does everybody have three sheets of paper now? Hold your hand up if you don't, and they'll come around. Okay. Now you got them? We're starting with blood pressure. And as you look at your report, like if you have cardiovascular family history and you've got some SNPs, then it's important that you take precaution because heart disease is a silent killer. 50% of men and 65% of women, the very first symptom, sign that they have heart disease, what do you think it is? Death, right? What? 50 in men, 65 in women. Death. My both parents this happened to, okay? So if you have a tool that can tell people that there's a problem, I have a feeling that had we been able to do the advanced lipid testing, I don't even know if it was available back then in the early 90s, but if we'd been able to do that, that we would be able to help my parents, and they would no longer, they would have probably lived. Well, they would have had to have a doctor tell them to quit smoking and stop eating crap, but they might have listened if they had this test that said, you're at a high risk of going to, you know, not doing well with this. Okay, so if you have them, the ACE one is really important, angiotensin related ADD1, which is not ADD like ADHD, but ADD1, a coding change in glycine to tryptophan, and it comes out with essential hypertension. So there's only four of them on the blood pressure. Ignore at the bottom where it says gene, variation. That was from our template, and it didn't get deleted. Sorry about that. This is version 1.0. How's it look for the that SNP? Are there some not there, or are these pretty much there? The TH is not? Okay. Okay, so not too bad. We've got the three important ones. The right. So again, if someone is in this situation, you're going to work with them on cardiovascular health. You're going to work with them on their fat intake. Not just, let's avoid fat. No, that's not it. If they have an ApoE44, you got to get them off of the saturated fat, 100%, right? It's not that. It's the quality of the fats and the damage it does to the vessels. We got to get inflammation under control. We have to measure. So if you look on the side, you're going to see the tests to be done. You got to take their blood pressure, of course. Some of these didn't get checked off. They go for all of them. So add some check marks in the second one. Glutathione is an important antioxidant, vitamin D, homocysteine, food allergies, celiac disease, calcium score. That's what Dr. Allen talked about yesterday. All of these are important. Where's the advanced lipid panel? Lynn, did you take the advanced lipid panel off this one? Add advanced lipid panel to that one. And take off the one where it says, yeah. Yeah, at the end, just at the end, somewhere for the labs. So Braverman, have that book here, The Edge Effect. And I'll mention it in conjunction with this, but also with, you can get this, I got this on Amazon used bookstore for $3. Yeah, $2, sorry. I love this book. So going back to the mental health status ones, there's quizzes in here for every single one of them, and then specific foods to avoid and not for GABA, for epinephrine, for dopamine, for serotonin. And I remember having my son do these because he was having trouble sleeping and he was always worried about getting hit the head and dying. I'm like, which one shows up for him? So he did the tests. He was like a 37 on GABA and 2 on epinephrine and not epinephrine, dopamine and serotonin. Like, okay, the kid has a GABA thing. Then we get his 23 back, and guess what gene he had a lot of? GAD, right? GAD. He had a lot, so it made sense. And then we could know how to deal with that. And he's got a lot of good stuff. So great, great book. And the reason it's mentioned here is because people who are high stressed, who are in some of the COMTs, the anxiety, they're in the worrier, and they have GADs, they're going to need some neurotransmitter help. That's going to raise their blood pressure, right? That stress level. So that's why it's mentioned here. But add advanced lipid panel. Okay? That's the blood pressure. On the back is nitric oxide. Nitric oxide is a great vasodilator. Nitric oxide is often low in folks. Nitric oxide gets produced when we're exercising. When we have low levels of nitric oxide, we can't dilate the vessels, right? We have more constriction. So there's tests. There's a little saliva test that you can do. Neo40 is a company that has them, but there's another company, and I'll find the name of it. Can you make a note for me to find the name of the nitric oxide test that I talked to somebody who had at the plant-based nutrition conference, and I'll look it up because I took the information and we'll add it to the page. But these are some simple tests. Like when you have a home test or you have it in your office, if you see people in your office and they can just do a little thing and it turns color, it'll tell them how much nitric oxide. People with the SNPs here, arugula, beets, There's a bunch of others as well, but arugula and beets are the highest level. And I have a chart. I'll include it. Make a note to include the chart of the nitric oxide foods. We had that in our last SIV and last year's because it was food as medicine. Okay? Important, right? Important. So the things you want to do is, right, of course, stop anything that's going to damage their vessels. Decrease the plaque formation. Smoking, oxidized fats. Maintain good blood sugar control for any of these. Maintain good blood sugar control because that's what causes the vessels to get damaged. And if you have high blood sugar and you have damaged vessels, that's where you're a heart attack waiting to happen. I'm thinking about creating a webinar called Are You a Heart Attack Waiting to Happen? What do you think? Yeah? And it's great information, and we need to get this out there because so many of them are, right? 50% that have it don't know they have it. My dad or mom, they were not diagnosed with any kind of heart problems at all. Clean bill of health. I have a feeling they had insulin resistance. The reason I know that is I have about 50 insulin resistance genes. Insulin resistance contributes to cardiac problems by the insulin itself damaging and thickening and stiffening the vessels. So if you do go, like, exert some energy and your vessels are all stiff, they can't expand, and that's what causes some problems. The other thing is that the glucose itself glycosylates the red blood cells, makes them stiff and sticky, and we have a problem. So who's been in the insulin resistance training with me? So you guys know all this, right? It's all in there. So important, blood sugar balance is important, controlling the sugars. And that doesn't mean just table sugar, because a lot of people are saying, I don't eat sugar. I eat honey and agave and maple syrup instead. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. Okay. So that's blood pressure. Blood clotting. This is super important. I would say, you know, we're not going to go into every symptom, because it'd take me days to do each one of these if I went into every symptom and every test, but we've laid it out for you so it's there. This was taken from every one of these charts was hours and hours of research to find the information and tabulate it and put it here so that you just have to look at this, right? Yes, it's good to understand it. It's good to understand it, but you're sitting there with people and you're trying to get through this. The more you go through it, the more you understand it and you remember it. You will never memorize this unless you are Jeffrey Bland and have a photographic memory. You will never memorize this. I don't memorize these things. I make the charts so I have references that I can keep on my desk. And when I'm working with somebody, I oftentimes spread out all my charts and all their stuff on a table and work through it and figure things out. The ones that you see a lot, the ones that are common, you will memorize because it'll be repetition. But don't sit down and do what we did in high school and college where you make the flashcards and you try to memorize all this stuff. No, have your charts, have your references handy, understand it, and then go back and look. Do I remember, you saw me, caught me on that earlier, the AA versus the, I don't know what the risk allele is. That's why I put it, look at my chart. I'm not going to memorize that. I'm not going to waste brain space on memorizing which risk allele goes to which SNP. Why should I memorize something that I can reference and have handy, right? I'll use my brain power for other things. Is that making sense? So clotting, really important. Prothrombin time, that's how long it takes to clot. If people clot real easily, they're more prone to cardiac accidents. So I would say go through these on yourself. Are these available in the chart? These would be on probably page 9 or 10. 9. Right, and when I look at these, let's see. There we go. And here's an interesting thing. This is why, again, I think that it was blood sugar that got my parents and caused the cardiac disease. I'm not bad compared to everything else that I have. I'm not bad at all. So I don't know that it was a familial hypercholesterolemia or any of that. And I have a few slides I'm going to go through and go through a little bit more detail on this as soon as I finish. So I don't think it's that. I don't really have a lot of cardiac. I don't have any reds in my cardiac. Pretty cool, eh? Oh, no, I have a couple of nitric oxides. I eat a lot of arugula. right? I eat a lot of arugula. And I had that test done, and he was like, wow, you're like the best. You didn't just take any supplements or anything? I said, no, but I had arugula for lunch. He goes, oh. I said, I usually eat arugula 2 or 3 times a day. Oh, okay, keep it up, you know? And with these SNPs, I would keep it up. That's right. You get people to do this, right? If they have to take a supplement, they can. Arginine is a good precursor to nitric oxide, but if somebody has a tendency to herpes, you'll get their nitric oxide up and then they're going to have outbreak, right? So it's all a matter of balance. Like, we throw the system out of balance. Let's just eat the food. Okay? Okay, so that's blood clotting. And the last one is cholesterol, right? Everybody spends gazillion dollars on statins. If you have a question, write it down, and we'll do it at the end. I'm almost at the end. Okay, we're on cholesterol and triglycerides. High triglycerides is almost always a sugar problem, not a fat problem. Almost always. So if the triglycerides are high, it's likely that there's a blood sugar imbalance. And I see this all the time when I take people through Sweet Spot, and we take them through the rebalancing, and we see the really high triglycerides, and suddenly they're down to 75, 50 after the program. So this is a critical thing. If you see high triglycerides, and especially if it's a high triglyceride to HDL ratio, really important that you catch that. That's a blood sugar, and the blood sugar will lead to blood pressure and cardiac. That's why I believe that my family history is the sugar, and that's what killed my parents. Not so much that they had the genetic risk factor for it. It was their lifestyle, of course. But it was because of the blood sugar imbalance problems, not because of cardiac imbalance problems. And that's what we want to differentiate for folks. So on the triglycerides, you've got a bunch of them listed here. In addition, it's, see, blood pressure and the cardiac. You can also write there ApoE44, C-ApoE44, because that's also a problem with cardiac. And we don't have that in my family, so it wasn't that. Okay, which ones do I want to go through? ApoC3, you're going to see somebody with high triglycerides, high cholesterol, blood sugar regulating issues, cardiovascular issues, and cognitive decline, right? So look at that one. Is that one on the sheet? Anybody have reds in there? ApoC3, the second one. Nobody? Good. Again, just because you don't have the SNPs doesn't mean you don't have a risk. Your lifestyle it can be an independent risk factor. But when you take genetics plus the lifestyle risk factors and you add them together, that's when you're a heart attack waiting to happen. And we don't want that. I've seen too many people who seemingly healthy, right, youngish, and dying suddenly. Okay? I'm going to go through a couple of the slides to go through a few details on these, FADS1. So if you see people who over and over, they have high cholesterol, but they're doing good stuff, could be a problem. Okay? So what I would encourage you to do is go through your own stuff, mark them up, see where you have some stuff. If you have questions that come up that you want to know from a personal standpoint, go ahead and do... come to tomorrow night's session and submit a case if you want to, or just come and we'll make sure the questions get answered. And I want to, somebody had a question over there, so I said I would give you time, and I just want to quickly just show you some other things. And you'll have these slides will be uploaded tonight or tomorrow.
When someone has the blood clotting disorders, at what point do you recommend that they go on like Lovenox, et cetera? When they're going to get pregnant, or if they continue to smoke, is there any criteria?
Yeah, well, if they continue to smoke, give them a drug, right? If you're going to keep hitting them over the head with a hammer, keep giving them the aspirin because they're not willing to change, right? You don't want them to die, right?
Do you automatically recommend that they go on medication if they've had a family history of that happening?
No,
or if
well, it depends, right? It depends. If they're like pristine in their diet, lifestyle, and they're still showing like a prothrombin time, a fibrin, you know, some of these others, and they're all checked off on there, you want to see what it's like. High platelet counts, right? Something that's a risk factor in spite of wonderful nutrition and lifestyle and quitting smoking, then yeah, of course, right? We want to keep them alive, right? We don't want to go into dogmatic, drugs are bad, I'm going to die rather than take a drug. No, right? But if they and if they refuse to do the lifestyle stuff, they're still smoking and drinking and eating processed meats and all that stuff, that's creating inflammation, by all means. Right, it's not a, if they refuse alternative treatment, give them Western treatment, you know, to keep them alive. But quality of life is going to suffer because then they get stress on their liver and all this stuff. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes?
Yeah, medical legally as a physician, I'd be worried about not prescribing or recommending that.
That's different, right? That's if legally, like majority of people in here don't have a medical license and they're not allowed to treat. And they get to work on this end and the patient gets to choose. But we always say, work with your doctor. Don't do anything against medical advice. You have to say these things to people. You must say these things to people. They have to make the decision. You inform them, they look at the risks, and they make the decision for themselves. But if you are in that medical thing, I mean, you know, Chet might be able to speak to that a little bit about how they do it, but you need to look at what are the risks, how comfortable do you feel, and you say, look, I need to prescribe this for you. I believe that there may be some other stuff that we can do and why we can prescribe this. If you don't feel comfortable taking it, I'm just going to write it in your chart that you don't feel comfortable taking it. Because you do get a lot of those, I'm sure, that are, I don't want drugs, I want drugs, I want the alternative. And then you're put in a bind because if you don't, then their family, when they're dropping dead, right? It's not them, they wanted the thing, their family didn't necessarily want it, and then they're going to come after you, right? So you have to protect yourself, it's really important. Make sense?
Yeah. This is slightly off topic from what we're saying, but just in general, somewhere in all of this paperwork, do you have a consent form for when you have patients do these labs?
A consent form for doing the labs?
Yeah, for doing genetic testing.
No, I don't. No. I don't do that. What, like, okay. Meaning it's consent form for that
just
this
disclosure
is
of what this is going to be and what it might show.
No, and you know what the thing is with this testing? They do it on their own. Mm-hmm. So they make the choice, and so I leave it up to the relationship between them and the lab. When I'm doing an interpretation, I always say, everybody's been on my calls, get tired of me saying it, this is not intended to replace a one-on-one. This is just thing, and this is a risk factor. It doesn't mean you have it or don't have it, and you know you do need to do that, and if you feel more comfortable having that written before you analyze it for them. But since the test is direct access, which is why I love direct access, my license allows me to order whatever tests I want to order, but I don't like to order them other than the functional tests. I don't like to order them. I prefer to have the client do it themselves so I don't get under scrutiny. Make sense? Yeah, that's why I like what Alan's doing with the direct access there. All right, so these are just a list of other things that we're going to talk about in other places. I'm not going to talk about them here, but we're going to talk about them in detox, but also confer a cardiac risk. So you've got this MTHFR, MTRR, CBS, PON 1 and 2. Let me talk about those two because these are ones that, oh, on the slides. On the slides. These are to ones we're going to talk about later in detox. But I put them here because there's a crossover and I didn't want to make these charts, you know, forever. I will cross-reference them. But PON1 and PON2 have to do with the exposure to pesticides increasing cardiovascular risk. All right? And you'll get these, they'll be on the site by tomorrow. Okay? The CoQ10, anything related to CoQ10 is cardiovascular. Right, CoQ10 is important in the Krebs cycle and for energy development. If anybody's on a statin, they ought to be on CoQ10 because the statin's depleted and CoQ10 is super important. And when we think about energy, people are like, my energy's fine. It's cellular energy, guys. It's not just, I have energy, I'm going to go run. It's what are the cells doing? And if the cells don't have the energy to repair themselves, the cells don't have the energy to do their proper function, to detox, et cetera, they get in trouble. And so they may not have a symptom that they present with that says low energy, but they have constipation. What's that? Low energy in the digestive tract oftentimes, right? They have detox problems where they're exposed to perfume and they have slow liver detoxification. They have depression, slow brain function, right? So don't just think of energy as energy to run and jump and hide. It's energy that has to do with the mental energy and the body energy. Make sense? So a lot of times, and you also have to be careful when they say they don't have low energy. How's your energy? I have great energy. And then on the other part, it says, how many cups of coffee or how much caffeine do you drink in a day? Oh, well, just 3 or 4. What happens if you don't do that? Oh, I feel exhausted. They have low energy, even though they don't think they have low energy, right? I didn't think I had low energy in my 20s, but I was hyped up on 10 cups between tea, which I never like coffee, and Diet Coke all day long. And if I missed my last dose before I left my office, I'd have to stop on the way home because I had an hour drive, and I have to stop at the Dunkin' Donuts and get that. And I didn't know I was tired. I didn't know I was tired until I learned all this stuff and went, oh, my God, I was exhausted. I was exhausted. Okay? We'll finish this. These are the people that no matter what they do, they have this severe hypercholesterolemia, hereditary hypercholesterolemia. These I don't think are tested. Well, ApoB might be. I'm not sure which of these are actually tested, but I wanted you to be aware of this when somebody said, well, I've got hereditary. Everybody in my family had it. Well, everybody in your family ate the same breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Everybody in your family had the same blood sugar imbalances. Everybody in your family smoked and ate cookies. Right? So is it hereditary because everybody in the family had it? Or is it the lifestyle, nurture versus nature? And then this is actually the lipoprotein A that Dr. Hopkins was talking about yesterday. This is a SNP. It's LPA. I haven't found it yet in this, but it's there's 31 SNPs that are identified there. And that's not lined up properly. That ApoE should be overlined up with LPA because the bullets underneath it apply to that. So on the ApoE4, the 4 increases the risk. The 2 actually decreases the risk by 15%. And if there's 2 twos, I don't remember the number, but it's much better. So those of you, the 2 or 3 of you in the room that are 2 twos, yay, decreased risk of cardiovascular. Okay. And then we're done at the, we're just done, right? I can't. Okay, so what do you do, right? What do you do is, it won't stay there. What do you do is foundational diet and lifestyle. Advanced lipid panel. Make sure it includes the LP little A. Avoid oxidized fats and things that are going to damage the blood vessels. Keep the blood sugar steady. Do stress management, right? And then nutrients, if needed. And again, Dr. Hopkins talked yesterday, some of these people with these advanced lipid profile things, he's got on between 3 and 8 grams a day of omega-3s. And most people are go, I take a gram a day, I'm good. You may not with these SNPs. You may not with these factors. Okay? CoQ10, et cetera. So you're going to hear this from a lot of your people. This is too hard. I can't do all this. So which is harder? Exercising. Or you can substitute anything there. Exercising, meditating, eating well, whatever, for this much of time a day, or being dead 24. What do you want? Right? I love that cartoon. Anyway, we have time for questions. So if you've written down your questions, go ahead and shoot them out to me. And then we have a great treat. The next thing we're going to do is detox. So, questions? Or are we going to go right? Is Laura right after? I forget. Should we have a break? No, she's right after me, right? And then we have lunch. All right. So I will, is she queued up? No? So questions. Yeah.
Hi. I have high cholesterol, and so my functional doctor always kind of, not worry about it, even though it's over 200, because she said it's my hypothyroidism. So is that...
Well, hypothyroidism can cause elevated cholesterol. Do the advanced lipid problem to see if it really is not a problem. And if you come back and your CRP is low, your cholesterol is a little high, your CRP is low, your HDL triglyceride ratio is 1. That's what it should be ideally. 1. She's back there. Okay. It should be 1, right? Equal 75 on HDL, 75 on triglycerides. So there's multiple risk factors, and this whole thing about cholesterol, there's either the ones that are going, your cholesterol's high, we got to get you on statins, or the ones that say, don't worry about it. Well, what about that in between that says, no, don't worry about it, unless you're a FCOMT worrier, and then you're going to worry. But do the work. Do the check. Okay. Get the test done.
Right.
Get the LP little a. Get the CRP. Get homocysteine. Right? And it could be because you're a hypothyroid, but what's causing your hypothyroid? That's what I want to know. right?
Okay.
Is it antibodies? Is it a low iodine? Is it receptor resistance or a combination? Is it poor conversion from T4 to T3? All of these things need to be looked at. And even a lot of the functional doctors who come from pure allopathic and move into functional, they're missing these key pieces. Does that make sense? Right? So don't just take that, don't just say, I have a risk factor for heart disease, and my doctor said it's okay. There's a lot of people who have died as a result of doctors saying it's okay that you have. Do you want to be one of them, or do you want your client to be one of them? So good question. And there was one other thing that triggered for me. Do the testing. This is when you should do the testing. I don't believe in just running $500 to $1,000 battery of tests every time somebody walks in because I want to know all this stuff. It's which tests are important. Like I said, minimum effective dose, minimum testing that's going to keep this person healthy and safe and alive. And this lipid panel needs to happen in anybody with a cardiovascular risk, anybody with a slightly elevated blood pressure, cholesterol, anybody with any of these SNPs. Okay? Be safe.
I had a quick question.
Yes.
So in the melatonin, that pathway, when you talk about going upstream to the 5-HTP, when do you look at the conversion from the serotonin to melatonin and supporting that? How do you determine if that's really the problem versus not just that there's not enough 5-HTP, but...
Yeah, that's a great question because there's no test that I know of to look at that. Although the oat test will give you some of that. The organic acid test looks at all these pathways, and you can see, like, if there's a backup here and it's going down to some of these metabolites that it may not be going across. If there's a B6 deficiency, it may not be. They have AANNT. It may be a problem, and symptomatically. So you give this person 5-HTP, and they sleep like a baby. Don't worry about it, right? You give this person 5-HTP, you increase the doses, you give them straight tryptophan, you play with this, and they're still not sleeping. It's either that it's not going that direction, or that's not the main problem. You have to look at GABA and other kinds of neurotransmitters. Make sense? When you understand how the body works, when you understand the biochemistry of how this works, you make decisions that are not in a textbook that says, this is my protocol. Those of you who have been on those case study calls with me a couple of times, we've come up with novel interventions and novel mechanisms for what was going on because we said that doesn't make sense based on what I know about the biochemistry and what could make sense, what would make sense. And we look at it and go, oh, that has a cofactor of that. Whew. And melatonin is actually a cofactor for iron, for storage of iron as serotonin. So that's a little known fact that I didn't find that in a textbook. I found that in an obscure thing when somebody had high serum iron and very low serum ferritin. I'm like, why the hell isn't it moving? It's like, that's what the body's supposed to do. She had low melatonin and we got it to move. So when you understand how all this works, you're able to really work with people on a level that nobody else is doing.